I think I hit the right chord with many when I proclaimed that for us Central Europeans, Britain remains a magical place. It is near yet distant, intimately known to us, yet remains uncharted territory. Good old England is familiar to us from Agatha Christie's detective stories, and this familiarity still counts for something, as I describe in the chapter Hoorah, English Women, and how things may be different to what they seem. This is not the case by any means elsewhere, as I describe in some other chapters. Britain is an island with a clearly defined boundary, which accepts into its fold more immigrants from every corner of the world and behaves more kindly to them than the vast majority of other European countries. You can read more on this theme in chapters Czechs, Slovaks, Hungarians, and other Poles in London, England Just Ain't What It Used to Be, and Czech and Slovak Romanies in Britain, Experiences of an Interpreter. England has managed to retain some traditions right to this day. For example, you do not have to carry an ID with you, and are permitted to drive without having your driving license with you, as long as you are ready to produce it within 24 hours at a police station. However endearing such freedoms are, they cause a newly arrived immigrant numerous problems. See, who are you? Where do you live? How to survive without an ID card? Even when we look at traditional British traits, as we imagine them to be, in my experience, much of that has survived. You can read about this in chapters Is There Anarchy in Britain? And I Am Really Not Happy About This. Can the English deal with the extremists? In some ways, the restrained British character fuses with the less restrained immigrant one, with an excellent outcome. See, darn it, why is everybody so pleasant about the contagiousness of moods? In certain cases, the outcome isn't so excellent, as I show, for example, in the chapter Hands Up, screamed the scumbag with his voice breaking. Everyone is aware that British English is different to the American version, but often we forget how many various accents and dialects we may come across in England, and we don't even have to leave London behind. I write about a totally different British English, its origins and its form today, in the chapter All About the Cockney Nation, Rooster's Egg and the Connecting Up of a Loaf and a Hoover. Incomers from countries which until recently were embedded in Eastern Europe, but are now fully fledged members of the European Union, are seeing their lives transformed by England. See, London works like a rehab centre, marriage dating agency in a jiffy, and send me a whitey, I don't want a black man. And simultaneously, they themselves are making an impact on England, sometimes for the better, sometimes not. As you can read in the chapter, the more languages you know, the more monkey-like you become. All in all, the Brits remember well the expansionism of their empire. They are slightly ashamed for the era of colonisation and en masse, as well as individually try and suppress their racist prejudices. One of the last remaining places where you can come up against open racism spouted by white English folk are nursing homes for the aged. Read the chapter, Taxi Ride for an Old Slipper. The Anglican Church has modernised itself, become more worldly since the days of Agatha Christie. See, coming home pissed from church. Troubles of the Anglican Church. In contrast, English parks remain the same from the time when Carol Chapek wrote about them with such elation, and the relationship to living creatures is less naive today and more ecologically sound than in the days of yore. But, as ever, it remains heartfelt, as you will be able to read in the chapter Do You Like Green Spaces? Go to.